Welcome to One Bills Light, the laser beam version of our daily show, One Bills Live, where we wedge in all the Bills we can in about 40 minutes. Coming up, can the Bills defense return to its top five status in 2021? NFL UK's Neil Reynolds stops by to discuss his plans to take in a Bills game in Orchard Park this season. And we ask our one burning question. Snap the ball!
And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. Thanks for joining us here on One Bills Live. Chris Brown and Steve Tasker with you as always. Steve, last season, a year of unprecedented success for Buffalo's offense. Over 500 points scored. Josh Allen setting single-season passing records. The rookie kicker, Tyler Bass, even set a mark for most single-season points. But what about the defense? After two straight seasons as a top-five unit, they finished 14th in total defense in 2020. 17th against the run, 13th against the pass, 16th in points allowed. Not terrible, but a step back from where they had been. So now, with most of the offseason decisions made by the Bills front office, is Buffalo's defense capable of returning to top-five status in 2021?
I think they are, no question about it, but they're going to have, they got to play better. But I think one of the things that will help them, as it will most defenses across the league, as you saw it as well as I did last year, across the league, offenses got off to fast starts almost universally. That points towards an offseason that wasn't quite as productive. We had the pandemic offseason, no pad practices, no contact, no preseason games. Defenses didn't get a chance to practice tackling, let alone do it live and full speed. So I think that showed itself early in the season. I think a lot of teams struggled to catch up with that. I don't think that'll be the case this year. Plus, last year as well, the defensive front for Buffalo had a lot of new guys in it. Vernon Butler, Mario Addison, and others. They lost Shaq Lawson and
Jordan Phillips
from the year before. Harrison Phillips was back on the field for them. Wasn't quite right. Now, once again, there's going to be a big shuffle up front. Trent Murphy gone, Greg Rousseau in, Boogie Basham in, Starlo Tulele opting back in. Certainly you'd like to think those guys are going to be upgrades from what the production they had a year ago. The two rookies, Basham and Rousseau, probably question marks, but certainly more gifted than the guys they lost.
Yeah.
And also, Starlo Tulele is a question mark as well, but he seems to be, by all reports, ready to come back and ready to resume his role. Former first-round draft pick, big time down inside and defensive lineman. Perhaps he can elevate the play of the guys down inside and on the end. I think they're going to get a lot more production out of Greg Rousseau and Boogie Basham than they did Trent Murphy a year ago and the others. So, yeah, I think there's every reason to think that with a better preseason, even with new guys into the fold, they're going to come out and play a little bit better defensively. And we'll see, and I think it all boils down. I think they'll be better against the rush early on because of the added physicality of their preseason. But I also think it comes down to how much better is the pass rush going to be. And that's the real question we don't know yet.
And I agree with you 100% that the scales were tilted in favor of the offense coming through the pandemic with all that was lost in the offseason for defenders in particular. I know we talked to Micah Hyde about this, and he was talking about how without a preseason, without any pads on in training camp, because they had the ramp-up training camp, if you remember, they didn't tackle anybody at full speed until week one.
Right.
And that's an adjustment that you can't make, even a veteran player, to adjust to that level of speed and then tackle in a fundamentally sound way. And that was a league-wide issue, not to mention the fact that offenses did not have to deal with crowd noise in any way, shape, or form. So, yes, the deck was stacked against defenses in an untold way that we had ever seen before, and it hurt the Bills along with a whole lot of other teams. You look at where they may have slipped the most, and, you know, fighting the run was, you know, something they haven't been terribly good at ever. I think they were near the top 10 in run defense the year prior, but they've been a top 5 pass defense each of the past
2 years prior to 2020, and that went away. And yes, it was probably due in part to their pass rush or lack thereof, and there were a lot of moving parts up front to the point where they had to scale back that rotation, if you remember, with Leslie Frazier scaling it back and saying, I got to play my most effective guys a little bit more often here because this rotation is just flat out not working.
One other thing, too, they were playing with an offense on their own team that was scoring 500 points, as we said. And they faced a lot more desperate offenses a year ago who, and you know, there's good players around the league. So when the team comes out desperate and they've got some players, they're going to make some hay against even a good defense because the Bills' offense was putting the pressure on them to air it out a little bit more than they perhaps would have when Josh was completing 58% of his passes instead of 69% of his passes.
And in fairness to the Bills' defense, they did find their footing in the second half of the season last year. I think in four of their last six games, they gave up less than 20 points. And if this defense is going to give up less than 20 points a week, they're going to win probably about 85 to 90% of their games with this passing offense. Now, Buffalo added, as you mentioned, Steve, most frequently at the defensive end position in terms of offseason acquisitions, their top two draft choices, along with free agent F.A. Obada and the re-signing of Matt Milano. We also know, as you talked about, Star Lotulelei opting back in after his opt-out year. What area of the defense do we believe will make the biggest difference to help boost effectiveness on the field?
I think it's going to be their run game defense. Star Lotulelei and Ed Oliver in there together, or whoever the case may be, I think they're going to play the run better. And when they do, it's going to lead to more third and eights, third and nines. Their defensive secondary is as good as any in the league. I mean, I think everybody's really happy with that. Even we've been talking all offseason about a CB to a second cornerback. Levi Wallace is a veteran player who's been around the block and has taken on all comers. And while he is not as good as Tre'Davious White, he's good.
They haven't been able to find better.
Right. And they've got some guys in there that give him competition to keep the fire lit under him as well. So I think their secondary is going to hold up really well. And if you give them third and eight and third and nine pluses because of your run defense on early downs, yeah, they're going to be fine. Their pass defense will follow suit. And you know, it's hard for a team to convert that all day or as often as it looks like the Bills may be able to put their team into.
But I tend to agree with you that the pass rush really has to come to play every single week, because if this offense continues to be as productive and effective as it has been in the past calendar year, they're going to be playing with a lot of leads, and that means your opponent is going to be throwing it even more. So if your pass rush is not where they feel it needs to be, and clearly with the acquisitions that they made in the draft and free agency, they knew an upgrade or at least depth at that position was necessary. It's got to deliver. It really has to deliver, knowing these other teams are going to be throwing a lot to climb back into games against a Bills offense that more often than not is going to hang 30 on people.
Clearly, the Bills defense is going to get a chance to rush the passer a lot because this offense is not going anywhere. Their offensive line may be a tick better than it was a year ago when, you know, they could keep Josh pretty clean. And if they didn't, Josh was putting the defense, put a lot of stress on defenses by running around. They're going to score points on this offense. So this defense is going to get a chance to reciprocate and rush the passer on their side of it. And how good they do that really is the hinge as to how good they're going to be playing.
Yeah, the schedule is a little bit more favorable this year, so I would tend to agree with you. I think the top five finish in overall defense is a possibility. It's going to be very interesting to see if they can get top five pass defense, knowing if the offense does what it's supposed to do, how much throwing they're going to see. Just by pure volume, they may not be able to finish as a top five pass defense because they're going to see balls in the air every single week. Time now, though, for the numbers game, where I'm going to quiz Steve on a number of defensive stats for the Bills from last season. So in 2018 and 2019, Steve, the Bills finished fourth in number of 20-plus yard pass plays given up, allowing 34 and 36. Now, that's when they finished as a top five pass defense in each of those 2 years. So where did the Bills rank in 20-plus yard pass plays allowed in 2020? Where do you think they ranked?
I'll bet you they ranked.
You know, the number one thing in Leslie Frazier's defense is do not let anybody get behind you. Prevent
the big
play.
I'll bet you they ranked 12 or above.
So you're saying 12th?
Yeah.
Okay. They ranked 8th, actually. They gave up.
I was right. Come on.
8th or 12th or above.
Better.
You don't get to pick a range. Oh, all right. Pick a ranking. They finished 8th last year. They gave up 44 plays of 20 yards or more. And there's a good chance this number goes up because they're playing 17 games. So we shouldn't forget that either.
Right.
But 8th isn't bad. That's pretty good.
It is pretty good.
All things considered.
And it's, yes, better than the top third of the league. And it's excellent. It's better than I thought it was, actually.
Yeah.
But it is, that speaks to me, it speaks to the secondary, not the pass rush.
Yes. And if the pass rush is better, hopefully that helps the secondary keep that number
right
at in a low range. In 2018 and 2019, the Bills defense ranked 26th and 12th in sacks. Where did they rank in sacks in 2020?
14.
You're close. They ranked 16th. 16th in sacks last year. They had 38. So the funny thing is they ranked 12th in 2019, and I think they had 44. They slipped to 16th this past year with just 38 sacks. And I tend to agree with you, Steve. All the shuffling up front, new faces in new places.
And
I mean,
no,
it was Jefferson, Addison, and Butler.
And no preseason.
And no preseason. Right. And A.J. Epinesa, for that matter.
That's right.
So all that change, it took time to fit it all together. Last one, Steve. In 2018 and 2019, the Bills defense ranked 7th and 9th in interceptions with 16 and 14 in those 2 years, respectively. Where did the Bills rank in interceptions in 2020?
I'm going to say 20th.
They ranked 7th. Seventh in interceptions with 15. Now, this is not total takeaways. It's
right.
Purely just interceptions. Yeah. Seventh in the league with 15. So they're right in between those numbers.
They're averaging one a game.
Yeah. Almost one a game. Yeah. But that's surprising, isn't it? Like people are saying, oh, the defense was down last year. Eighth in big plays allowed, 16th in sacks, 7th. In interception. So it's not a back-end problem. It's a front-end problem, and that's why I think we've seen them address, you know, the defensive front as much as we have
right. This
offseason.
Yeah.
All right. Well done, Steve. Time now for our featured guest. It's NFL UK writer and analyst Neil Reynolds joining us. Neil talks about how far he sees the Bills going in the AFC this year, his son's chance to play quarterback at the college level in Canada, and the NFL staging of regular season games, potentially, in Germany. Here's Neil. The NFL reporter based in the UK, Sky Sports studio host and host of the Inside the Huddle podcast, and the Neil Reynolds podcast. Yes, you guessed it. It is Neil Reynolds joining us here on the show. Neil, how is it? How's the weather over there on that side of the pond this time of year?
You know what? Actually, it's beautiful. And I'm sat in a car because I was doing some filming today. You've kind of caught me on my way home. I've got the windows done up so there's no traffic. It's about 82 and sunny, which we don't normally get here. So, if my head gets a little bit shinier than usual, well, it always gets shiny, but you'll forgive me because I'm absolutely boiling.
Well, I can totally relate. So, I'm shiny up there as well.
In the UK, do you know what a cicada is?
Is that a cricket?
Yeah, it's a huge.
It's like a locust.
You don't.
Yeah.
You're not plagued with those in UK.
No,
that's
you
do, good.
You've got to get halfway. You've got to get halfway through France before you'll start to hear them.
Oh, all right, cool. Yeah, okay, good. Well, we're dealing with them.
They're
here.
Overrun in the Mid-Atlantic region, and they're showing up on radar. There's so many thousands of them. It's crazy. It's like the end of days down in Virginia, and they had Ryan Fitzpatrick with a cicada in his lodged in his beard at practice today. They're all over.
Honestly.
The place.
The stuff that man has had in his beard over the years,
right?
I'm sure.
That's a good point.
Baby carrots, all sorts of things.
Right. And getting ready to have you on the show today, we've heard that you may be crossing the pond to come over to 3 or 4 games here in the States and be here in person.
I am, yes. Yeah. So I'm going to be working with a travel company in the UK to bring a group of fans over for some games. Obviously, I normally watch from the comfort of a studio or a press box. I can't be there on Sundays because of our Sky Sports shows, but I'm going to come for a couple of Monday night game and a Thursday night game. So I'm going to be in Buffalo, in the stands, in December against the Patriots on Monday Night Football, and then in Minneapolis for the Steelers and Vikings. So I've always looked at these games that are played in Buffalo in December, and I sit in a nice, warm, cozy studio, and I always say, that's football weather, that's great, yeah, let it snow. I don't really mean it when I've actually got to sit there and do it myself.
You know, September's a much nicer month of the year to come, and if you're not into the cold weather, but you're going to come to the Patriot game.
I am, yes, so I'm very excited. I'm very excited about the Bills. Obviously, I'm playing to the home crowd here, but I'm very excited about the Bills this season anyway. I really want to see Josh Allen in the flesh. I think, you know, there's a fan in me. He's so exciting, so I can't wait for it, actually.
Yeah, that should be good. Of course, watch. Neil comes here, and we'll get, like, some kind of 55-degree Fahrenheit reprieve, and, you know, he'll be here in, like a windbreaker watching the game in December. We'll get those wacky weather days sometimes. We also understand, before we get into the Bills a little bit more here, Neil, that you've got someone in your family that is going to be playing football at the collegiate level north of the border from us quite a bit. I think Ottawa's about, what, 7-8 hours from us?
It's more than that even, yeah.
More than that. But you've got your boy. He's going to be playing at the next level here.
George Reynolds?
Yeah, there he is. My son George, he's at the NFL Academy. He's got a scholarship to go to the University of Ottawa. He's already been talking with your new British defensive lineman, F.A. Abada. F.A.'s invited him down to a Bills game. So it might be quite a drive to Buffalo, but probably a short flight. So I think George will be checking out a Buffalo Bills game at some point anyway. But he's worked very hard for it. He's a very, you know, I'm biased, of course, but I hear from people that he's a very good quarterback. You know, Chris Sims tells me that, Kurt Warner tells me that. So, yeah, he's got a shot to get over to that side of the pond, which doesn't happen very often for British or European quarterbacks. He's got a chance to put some game film on tape and see where his journey goes next. But, yeah, really excited about the chance to play in Ottawa, yeah. I think he is.
And there are usually a handful of players every year, you know, that get drafted out of Canada that, you know, get a shot in the NFL to at least make a roster. I know that. Heck,
he also had I was just going to say, he actually had from Tom Lemming, Tom Lemming's high school magazine. He had a three-star rating last year.
Right.
So, you know, we've looked at a lot of three-star quarterbacks that were in America. They got sort of 16 or 17 D1 offers. I think with COVID and with the fact that George is British, those kind of offers didn't materialize. That's not to say that Ottawa isn't a great experience and a great school. It is. And the coaching staff up there are excellent. You know, the coach is an ex-CFL head coach. They've got Packers assistants that are on the staff. George has got, he got quite a good rating, and I think he's got a chance to go and prove himself on that side of the pond.
I mean, Steve played with Canadian players here on the Bill. Tyndale, right?
Timmy Tyndale was here. Yeah, Canadian players that come down constantly. There's no Doug Flutie, the whole nine yards. There's a ton of guys. Joe Capp, all those guys that played up there over the course of the era.
But even the collegiate kids up there, they'll come down and play. I mean, Akeem Hicks, I think, he was playing up in Canada. I want to say he played in Regina or somewhere out west in Western Canada. So they get looks. I mean, all he needs is an opportunity, and then off you go.
We've been asking our listeners today, and you'll have an over. You're a big picture guy with the podcast, and over the course of all the big transactions, I don't want to take one team or anything, but one transaction or one acquisition, whether it be a new head coach or a new player, draft pick, which one of those, and we've asked our listeners to chime in as well, which one do you think is going to make the biggest impact this season for whichever team made that one single transaction? Do you have any that pop out of the long list of transactions that happen every offseason?
Yeah, well, I'm going to cheat. I'm going to go with one that's really old in the offseason and one that's really new. I think Julio Jones going to Tennessee changes their offense. You know, how do you load up to stop Derrick Henry when you've got A.J. Brown and Julio Jones now? If it's the Julio that was last year, you're probably still going to roll the dice. Even if you missed 7 games with a hamstring injury, he still had close to 800 yards receiving. The 6 years before that, averaging 1,500 yards per season, this is a Hall of Famer. This is, now you've got not one number one receiver in A.J. Brown, but you've got two. And what a what an opportunity for Ryan Tannehill. You know, he was kind of just there in Miami with not huge amounts of talent around him. Now he gets the chance to work with Derrick Henry in the backfield, Julio Jones, and A.J. Brown. So that would be the most recent one. And I will go back to right at the start, which actually before the Super Bowl even. And I think Matthew Stafford to the Rams is going to be fascinating. I think we saw Sean McVay kind of fall out of love and doubt Jared Goff. And I think what can Sean McVay dial up with that real true gunslinger, which I think is what Matthew Stafford is. I think Matthew Stafford doesn't get nearly the attention he deserves. So I think he can really change the Rams. That one to me is really exciting.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Yeah, and the NFC West is going to be competitive. Well, yeah, and
such a long time ago.
Yeah, and for our listeners, we were keeping it to the AFC, but we went league-wide with Neil here, so he had a little bit more to choose from, and that's why he was able to pick Stafford with the Rams. We also talked about Carson Wentz. We know there's some doubt as to whether he can recapture the magic that almost made him an MVP just 4 years ago as his team went to the Super Bowl. But what do you think about his chances of recapturing the magic, so to speak, with his former OC and Frank Reich in Indy?
I mean, it's the best landing spot. I think it's absolutely the best landing spot for Wentz. The line is a world away from what he had to go through in Philadelphia the last couple of years. But, you know, not everything was on that offensive line. You know, some of it was on Carson Wentz as well. Yes, it's a great situation to be with Frank Reich. It's a great offensive line. It's a good running game. I was writing my season preview magazine a couple of days ago, and I did the Indianapolis Colts. And I think he was one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL statistically last year, throwing from a clean pocket. That's going to worry me. So I think everything's there. We all saw what was there in 2017, pre-injury, even late in 2019 when he kind of carried that team to the playoffs. So there have been flashes, and it's a good situation. It's one of those now for me where you just got to show me, you know, and I think show the league. And so I'm hopeful, but I'm not convinced.
Yeah, and that's I think you echo a lot of – there's just too many question marks for people to jump on board with Carson Wentz being a savior of a team. I think the thing that intrigues me about the Carson Wentz situation in Indianapolis is that Indianapolis has a fully formed roster, and it won't be as though Carson Wentz has to be Patrick Mahomes for the Chiefs and carry the team, or Russell Wilson for the Seahawks and carry the team. He can find his legs before they really depend on him to do anything special because of the quality of the players around him and their defense.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. The defense makes a difference, doesn't it? And I think when we look at what he was working with at the back end of 2019, you know, there were most of those guys were coming off the practice squad. So it's, you know, of course the talent level is going to help, but you know, I wrote this as well. He kind of comes in with some damage. You know, he's a little bit shell-shocked. He's a little bit tarnished. And we're all kind of just sitting back and waiting to be convinced. And he must be aware of that. You know, he knows what life in the league is like for a quarterback. So, it's a big test for him and pressure as well, because really, if you look at it, it's a team that's ready. You know, I know from talking to a couple of people that were close to the Bills, they said that Colts gave the Bills all they could handle. They were one of the toughest teams the Bills faced last year when they met in the playoffs. So this Colts team's not far away.
Right. Yeah, they have a very complete roster. So, yes, if Wentz can catch fire, they could be on to something. We know that the International Series returns, so you'll get to watch some games up close and personal at Tottenham Stadium in October this year. But I'm sure you saw the Associated Press report that just came out today about the NFL wanting to hold games in Germany, and they are launching the process to identify a partner city. Now, Steve and I are old enough, and I'm sure you are, Neil, to remember the days of NFL Europe when Germany had two teams in Frankfurt and Berlin. Would you put those two cities as the front runners, or do you think there are other strong contenders in Germany?
I think there's a few. I think when you look at Frankfurt, Dusseldorf, Munich, Berlin, Yeah, I think it's going to be a very competitive process. And NFL Europe was very popular in Germany. It was, for me, it was some of the best nights I ever had covering this sport. I used to go to a game every weekend when I was working for NFL UK and working for NFL Europe. So I'd fly on a Saturday morning, watch a game, fly back on a Sunday. It's fantastic. The fans deserve it. They deserve a game. And I don't think it's going to take away from what we have in London. I don't think it should scare any British fans at all. It will be, when it happens in Germany, one heck of a party, one giant kind of step for the NFL internationally. And just, you know, I feel like our games in the UK are safe. And I almost wonder, and this is just me playing fantasy football, I don't control the budgets. I wonder if we'll ever see the international games becoming like Formula One. You know, we're in Brazil, then we're in France, we're in Germany, there's two games in London. You know, I think it's going to be great to just keep expanding the game. I don't know which city will be favourite, but I know there'll be a lot of cities in the mix in Germany because they have a really passionate fan base. And the numbers, when you look at all the kind of metrics and TV viewing figures, fan support, it's all right there, the same as the UK. So, you know, it's going to take off in Germany as soon as they get this game.
Yeah. How much do you think stadiums play a role in deciding the partner city? Obviously, these cities are all going to send in their RFPs. And as we understand it, based on the AP report, the NFL hired London-based The Sports Consultancy to handle the requests for proposals. I'm wondering how much the stadium part of it is a factor in that, you know, stadium accessibility and conformability to the NFL game.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there are only a handful of stadia in the UK that can actually fit the full length field and the end zones. So it's the length of the field that's the issue. Absolutely, it's going to play a part. The NFL see what they've got now with Wembley Stadium and to a greater extent, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. You know, a Premier League team purpose built an NFL stadium to get these games. And it's beautiful. It's amazing, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. So these, you guys know, you're right there. Steve, you'll know, you played. You're a creature of habit. You want to know everything's there for you. Coaches are anal about what they have for their players. So stadiums, infrastructure, logistics, they're everything. They're everything to get in these games. Now, obviously, fan growth is a huge part of it, but you're not going to get teams over unless they're really happy with where they're playing when they come overseas and they're happy with the practice facilities, all of that. So it will be a major, major factor.
One of the things that you've been familiar with, the pathways player for European players to come to Buffalo, and Buffalo now has two. Not only Christian Wade, who's still waiting on the practice squad perhaps to get a chance to play for the Bills, and also F.A. Obada, who is now a free agent acquisition by Buffalo. That's got to kind of warm your heart to see both of those guys. As you said, they've been in touch with your son George about coming down from Ottawa to see a game. It's got to be kind of give you a warm feeling about European players having a place, particularly here in Buffalo.
Yeah, I love it. And, you know, I'll be rooting for the Bills every time they step on the field, those two guys. And, you know, it's just tremendous. They came in different ways. That's what's so interesting to me. You could have, you know, hopefully someone like George or other kids that come through the NFL Academy going the college route into the NFL or into professional football. You've got Christian Wade, who came from another sport. So he's a professional athlete in another sport, gave up a lucrative career in rugby to try his hand at NFL. And you've got FA, who played five games of amateur football. And trust me, fellas, it is like park football. It's amateur as amateur can be. And he played five games of American football before being spotted by the Dallas Cowboys. And then he's been on this journey. So I think because both of them have been around it for a little while now, we shouldn't, but we do get, oh, we know Christian Wade's on the Buffalo Bills. We know FA's in the NFL. It's amazing that these guys are in the NFL, considering what they've done. And I think FA is going to be, I think he's going to be really successful. He made a lot of plays for Carolina last year. You know, he sacked some of the quarterbacks. I don't know if you guys have got a chance to speak to him yet, but, you know, he sacked Tom Brady, sacked Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan. You know, it was a who's who of quarterbacks last year for FA. He can play along the line as well. It's really exciting.
I'm going to use a direct quote from you concerning the Bills. Quote, I fancy the Bills to topple KC in the AFC, and they could win the whole darn thing. End quote. Why are you so bullish on the Bills finally toppling the Chiefs?
Yeah, that is that's from my season preview magazine, the Gridiron Annual, which comes out in July. The Bills led by 9 last year in Arrowhead. This is a franchise quarterback league, and the Buffalo Bills have one of the very best in Josh Allen. They have a defense which I think on it, you know, again, maybe the numbers are misleading when you look at the stats from last year, but look at what they did to Baltimore in the playoffs. It's an elite defense. There's everything you want in the passing game. You know, do you want Stephon Diggs? Do you want Cole Beasley? Gabriel Davis, Isaiah McKenzie, all the different ways he can be used. And on comes Emmanuel Sanders as well. So I think it's a very, very exciting team, a very complete team. Maybe Kansas City, it's hard to say with Patrick Mahomes. Maybe they take a little step back. I mean, let's see. We don't know there. But, you know, Bills are going to be right in the mix. And I really do fancy them to win it all this year. And I apologize in advance because I'm terrible at predictions. So I apologize. That's all I can say.
Take away from all of that bravado and confidence, and you just sucked the air out of the room there, Neil. What? Don't do that.
Which of the AFC East teams, the Patriots, the Dolphins, the Jets, which one of those teams made the most improvement and will be say second place if the Bills win it? Who's going to get second place?
So I actually think it's the Dolphins, and the Dolphins have gone reverse Miami Dolphins. So the Dolphins used to make a big splash in free agency, almost out of desperation, and then it didn't pan out. The Dolphins were very quiet in free agency and had a very good draft. The New England Patriots, who are normally very quiet in free agency, spent record amounts of money. And I don't think it always equates to winning games, winning the offseason. So I'd say it's the Dolphins. I think the Dolphins are building a really good roster. They had a really good draft. Concern there is I still until is in the same boat as Carson Wentz. You need Tua to show it because you know, twice he was benched for Fitz last year. Now he's not got Fitz to ride to the rescue. That might be good for him actually. So I think Tua's going to grow because they'll have better weapons around him. They've looked at speed. You know, you got Will Fuller coming over. You got Jalen Waddle through the draft. So we're going to know from Tua how much better he can be and whether he can be that franchise quarterback that they've been searching for, frankly, since Dan Marino. You know, there were flashes of it, but he wasn't really working with great weapons. So I think Miami are going to present a challenge, but I think this is Buffalo's division to lose. I think the Bills really are a class team.
Last one for me, Neil, because Steve and I were discussing this. The Bills don't play the Patriots until about week 14 or 15.
13.
13, sorry. Not till December, as you know, since that's the game you'll be coming up for. I'm almost guaranteeing by that point in time, we're going to see Mac Jones on the field. When do you think he takes over for Cam Newton, who looks like his best days are behind him?
Yeah, I think look, Bill Belichick really likes Cam Newton, and so Cam's going to have a chance to win that job. But, you know, I think week 4, week 5, if it is Cam at all, if Cam gets to start, I think we'll see that the best is behind him. And I think there'll be a pressure to bring Mac Jones on board, especially given everything that they've invested in the offensive side of the ball. So, look, it could be Mac Jones from week 1. We're seeing this with the Chicago Bears. They're saying Andy Dalton's the starter in week 1. But if Justin Fields has a strong training camp, he's starting. It'll be the same with Mac Jones.
Yeah.
I think it'd be very interesting to see how quickly they go to him because they like Cam. But, you know, I think Cam Newton's thing last year, well, there wasn't any weapons around him. And that's true. I've just said exactly the same excuse for Tua Tagovailoa. But I also saw a lot of passes where Cam skipped it into the dirt when it was 5 or 6 yards in front of a receiver. So they've invested in the first round quarterback for a reason. I think we'll see Mac Jones by week 4 or 5, if not sooner. I would not be surprised if he isn't the opening day starter. But again, this is why I put Buffalo such a strong favorite in the AFC East. We don't know what Mac Jones will be yet. we don't know what Tua will grow to be. We need to wait and see with Zach Wilson and more around him. We know what the Buffalo Bills have. They have an genuine MVP talent in Josh Allen. So I know there's been years of Patriots domination in the AFC East. So everyone's kind of sort of spookily looking over their shoulder at the New England Patriots, this winning machine. But, you know, it's about what roster you've got now. It's about what players you've got now. And I think the Bills are the strongest.
Neil, thanks so much. It's great seeing you again. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, because actually, this has been really good for my weight because I've lost about 18 pounds while doing this interview.
I can't believe you didn't leave your, can't believe you didn't run your, leave your car running to at least have the AC blowing on you. You are a true pro over there. And Bob Crast also wants to thank you for hooking up Meek Mill and Jay-Z with that Bentley that they got him for his 80th birthday. They couldn't get it in the States. We heard you grease the wheels on that. So good job on you for getting him his Bentley.
I'm a man of many talents, many connections. Thanks, guys. It's always
take
good
care,
to be
Neil. All right, Steve, we close out this episode with our one burning question. In the last week or so, the Colts, Eagles, Texans, and 49ers have all canceled their mandatory minicamps. The one burning question is, how much of an edge will it give those teams that do hold mandatory minicamps going into the regular season? Is this an infinitesimal thing?
At this point, no. I don't think it is. I think it means a lot. These guys are getting off to a faster start. If you don't have a mandatory minicamp, that means there's that much you can't do. You can't install that much. It's 3 days of installation.
Yeah.
It's going to give some teams a basis for what they're looking at. It's also a better evaluation process because in mandatory minicamps, they can suit up and do some more physical things.
Yeah. Still not in pads, but yes, they can do teamwork and all that.
They can do teamwork and start to look at players. And I think a couple of things happen, and they attack this on all fronts. They're going to be able to evaluate the bottom end of their roster. So you'll see after these mandatory minicamps, a handful or maybe more teams shuffle the bottom two or three spots on their roster and say, you know, this kid is just not going to make it for us. Let's get somebody else in here.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see some bottom of the roster shuffling around the league, and guys will be signed and released. You'll also get a chance for the coaches. You'll get a chance to see guys how well they're picking up what they've done so far. And they'll install chunks of the offense over each day of the mandatory minicamp. So they'll get a chance to get the basis of the offense in, so it gives them that much of a head start when they do hit the field running in training camp. So it is something, and once you get into the regular season, maybe you look back on it and say, I don't know how much. But I think it does give you a little bit of a head start, so when training camp comes, your practices are a little more efficient. Your drills are a little more efficient.
Yeah.
Your installation goes smoother and quicker and is more effective because they retain some of that information. So, yeah, there is something to be gained. And I think no matter what the head coaches tell you, I think it's an absolute reaction to the vaccination process for their players. I think that's the reason they are abandoning it.
If you're the Tennessee Titans or the Jacksonville Jaguars, you're pretty happy right now. There's two teams in your division, in the Colts and the Texans, who are just scrapping mandatory minicamp. I have to believe you feel you're getting a step ahead of them. Maybe it's partly due to vaccinations. Maybe it's partly due to coaches trying to acquiesce to the Players Association saying, hey, we don't want to be doing too much in the off season. So maybe it's kind of a give back for that. The 49ers said it was injuries that partly impacted the decision. They lost wide receiver Tarvarius Moore to a season-ending Achilles injury in OTAs running a route on air. And then they lost offensive lineman Justin School to an ACL tear just two plays later in the same practice. So two season-ending injuries in the span of three plays. Now, Steve, it's unfortunate, but it's football. Like, that stuff kind of happens, right?
Absolutely. And there's nothing that says they're not going to lose six guys on the first practice of training camp. I mean, if that's your point, why are you practicing at all?
I think it's an excuse for what the real reasons are.
Exactly. And I think this as well, if you do have a rash of injuries, that's why you have sports science people on your staff.
Yeah.
What are we doing on training camp? Are we warming up properly? Are we
hydrating,
stretching properly? Are we hydrated? What about the recovery? Are we giving these guys enough time to recover? Are we, you know, do some of these guys get a bigger workload? What are the data on their pad, you know, on their GPS things? Are these guys all, did they have an elevated workload the day before? All of that stuff.
you've got to dissect that and find out. But this, you know, running a route on air and blowing your knee out, you rarely see it, but it happens.
It happens.
That's what happened to Teddy Bridgewater. It was non-contact.
Yeah, stuck his foot in the ground at the top of his drop. And
Deshaun Watson, his rookie year in Houston, did the exact same thing. Stuck his foot in the ground, planted, and it gave out. It happens. If you're going to – there's no way you can use that as an excuse to not practice.
Yeah.
So the underlying reasons, I think, are obvious to all of us. As we watch this offseason progress, they're trying to get to levels of vaccination and where they have protocols that can be lifted where we can go in and do business as usual. And I think some teams are just not willing, perhaps some ownership groups are just not willing to spend the money on the protocols and this and that and the other and jump through all the fiery hoops you have to do these mini camps when you're not, you haven't reached herd immunity.
For the Texans, it's probably a little bit different. There are some that believe it's an extension of an olive branch to Deshaun Watson because by canceling mandatory minicamp, they eliminate their ability to fine Watson for not showing up in the amount of $93,000, something that he would have incurred by not showing up, and he was firmly expected to be a holdout. But how strange do you find the Colts and Eagles decisions, knowing there are two quarterbacks in those situations that either have to recapture their form, Carson Wentz, or develop in Jalen Hurts? And not to mention the fact Nick Sirianni is a first-year head coach. How strange did those two strike you?
Very. I think there's things going on here with some of these clubs that, you know, there's either a huge expense incurred or the level of protocols that they have to jump through to make these mandatory minicamps happen, and they still haven't reached the threshold of what they want to do. Maybe some of the coaching staffs aren't vaccinated and refuse to get vaccinated or what have you. Certainly we know that some of the players have voiced their concerns over the vaccine. I think it's a reaction to that. And instead of going through and having to fight through the protocols just to get in, you know, the base, the foundation of your offense or defense and just get to know everybody's name, get them on the field, instead of going through all of that to do it, they'll just rework the first couple of days of their training camp when it starts and go from there. I think the protocols, I think some of these guys are, I think it's COVID exhaustion. You know what I mean?
Maybe, but I think it's, whether it's inadvertent or an acquiescence to the Players Association, you've opened the door to have them come forward and say, well, you had a handful of teams cancel mandatory minicamp. Clearly they don't think it's necessary, so we don't want to do it going forward. And that could very well be a future negotiation between the league and the Players Association that maybe some of these coaches hadn't even given thought to. I don't know. It's hard to really say, but you've got almost a handful of teams now. And, San Francisco, they're talking about it being injuries. I know I read that Trey Lance is supposed to hang around, even though there's no mandatory minicamp, but the development for that guy over those 3 days, he's going to miss some valuable time without teammates in minicamp. So,
these guys can hang around and work out in the building. They just can't go out on the field with coaches. That's basically the caveat to them hanging around, just playing football in the yard all day, every day with the coaches and players and all the guys who want to show up can show up. Well, they can be here in the building, but by rule, the coaches can't go out there and, you know, have a script and have them run through plays and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's all off the table. They can come over here and do their own thing, but only in training. They can't be coached, and they can't go out and play football 7-on-7, that kind of thing. And that's, while there is some value to that, it's not like a mini camp.
It's not the same. Like that, yeah. So whether these decisions have a big impact in setting these teams back remains to be seen, but what it does do is give more ammo to the players who want more time off this time of year. That'll do it for this edition of One Bills Light. Please subscribe on whatever platform you listen to so you know when we've got some fresh content for you. And remember, whenever there isn't enough time for a One Bills Live, there is always enough time for One Bills Light. For Steve Tasker, I'm Chris Brown. We'll see you next time, everybody.